welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we've got a really different show because I'm going to reveal some things that, well, I guess it's been 20 to 30 years now, people have been asking me that I refuse to answer. Now, why would I do that if I had the answer? Well, I did have the answer, but the problem is that I have a teacher and also others that I listen to. And the suggestion to me has been for some time, for the 20 or 30 years, that I not reveal anything that isn't on the verge of or can't in the near future be discerned about science, and particularly things that involve the physics, because to talk about things that are a revelation but going too far beyond the present science doesn't help ageless wisdom. It actually causes the dark side to impede the process of discovery in some ways, and by discreditation, basically. Because you can be easily discredited when the equipment and the understanding, consciousness, of the people who are attempting to discover new, we'll say, new science, is just beyond them. It's too far ahead. It allows people to claim that it can't be true, and they also have all the egotistical reasons for that, etc. And so that has been the hallmark of why I haven't done it. Now, it is still up to me to determine those qualifications. And I sometimes say, well, is it time yet? Maybe. Now, other people have said, well, haven't you written these things in some couched way, kind of squeezing it at the edges so you really don't understand it? Well, we don't understand it in Life's Hidden Meaning and maybe in a couple other shows. The answer is sort of, yes. If you read Life's Hidden Meaning, you could figure these things out. I have yet to have one person do that, but I'm just saying that one person who has contacted me and explained it to me. But tonight I'm going to explain what exactly is dark energy, what exactly is dark energy. It will be consistent, after I explain it, with, you can go to chapter 4 as an example, and 10, Life's Hidden Meaning, and you'll be able to say, oh, so that's what he was talking about. Okay. And you may have to listen to the show more than once before you completely get it, because it's still physics. But again, I'm not going to get into mathematical formulas at least too much. I might mention something here or there, but no actual math on the radio, of course. And then I'm not going to change the, we'll say, the general definitions of things as they have stood. What I'm going to do is explain things that are really inexplicable in science, and that may cause consternation in some scientists who I know listen to the show, and it may also lead to some ahas. So that's what it is, kind of thing. Especially if they go and read my textbook, because they're going to be able to put two and two together and say, oh, I think I got the whole system. Now, I won't go through all the details in the textbook that further explain what I'm going to explain tonight, because that is a little too complicated to do on radio. Mainly because this would be almost something that would have to go back and forth in question and answer in like a classroom setting that this show really doesn't lend itself to. And it would take three or four times the length that we don't have, although we do have tonight an extra half hour still. Well, I could call it our fortune, maybe the misfortune of the show that was supposed to go on after us, because they're stalled out doing something else or whatever. And so we actually still have a 2.5 hour show. Now, why is that such a good thing? Well, we're going to probably need it tonight. I will not rush it so that I'll lose you, I hope. I hope I will keep going slow enough so that everybody, you know, most people can stay with me, and you won't be scratching your head. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about what is tonight's show, the revelation of the esoteric universe. Well, the esoteric means hidden universe. And the revelation of it is to reveal something, many things about it tonight, that have been alluded to in some of the work I've done and in some other teachings in April's Wisdom. Just not anywhere near enough to deal with it in a more mundane science way until now. So I hope that that can be done in a few or as many as are willing to. People in that bent will go ahead and prove or disprove or attempt to prove or disprove what I'm going to go into. So let's start off by me explaining some basics about how our whole universe generally functions. These things are not going to be specific in the first part of the show. They're going to be the general characteristics so that we're all on the same page, at least, so you have some idea what I'm talking about when I get specific. To begin with, the beings that exist as huge, we'll call it, life sources in our universe are, by a vast majority, this is going to shock you, not a part of our universe in full consciousness. Now, what does it mean, full consciousness? It means that their consciousness is focused in a higher universe. It's like when we die and we go to the astral world, our consciousness is focused in the astral world. We could still say, well, okay, that's where we have senses, etc. And it makes every bit of sense to explain that, but in the mental body, we still have senses. And we still can exist in those senses, but our focus of our consciousness is in the astral world. But kind of the flipped reverse of that for these beings. They exist in universes beyond the present universe. They are not as high a consciousness being as the God of our universe. Because although their consciousness is very high, and we're talking way beyond what would be in any respect any being that exists in consciousness in our universe, they're way beyond that. They are not, quote-unquote, at the God level, because a God, by definition, creates its own universe. It may create a physical universe, as the one we're in, or it may create an astral universe, which is something totally different than the astral plane. And there are beings that exist in the astral universe that aren't gods, because they aren't out creating universes. What they do is they create a sense of gods, sometimes more than one, but most of the time one god, God's universe, and they want to experience the uniqueness of the expression of the creation of God and the life it creates in that particular universe as a means of expanding their overall consciousness and their sense of universes different from the one that they developed from. And that means that these beings in the cosmic astral universe, you know, that's way out there, at one time were members in full consciousness within a cosmic physical universe, not necessarily ours. Whoa, that's a little bit hard to understand. Okay. Well, because there could be an infinite number, literally, there is no limitation of gods creating physical universes. In practical terms, to my understanding, there is a absolute number. But it's since it's unlimited, it doesn't mean anything to say there is, because tomorrow there could be another one that is added to that. But there is an absolute number at the present time, my understanding. And I want you to know that the amount I understand about this is not nearly enough to talk with absolute authority in a lot of the things I'm going to say. They are they have to be, we'll say, stated with some statement of, I may not know, you know, or I may be wrong about it. All right. So, but for the most part, I think I've got it pretty clear, as at least as I've gotten feedback, again, from sources greater than my own consciousness. It isn't like I'm just flaunting out information that I just come to me and then I don't have any checks or balances, but I do. Now, you can choose to not believe that. That's okay, too, because this program is to get you to think and to experiment, as I said, if you have the inclination and the ability to do so, to determine the truth of what I say. So that's the whole idea of it. It isn't for me to be pontificating and all of everybody else like, oh, yeah, whatever you say, it's got to be true. So, but I do say that there's always that possibility that I'm not correct about anything. But this is an area that if any part of what I say might be a little iffy, it certainly is going to be, as we go on into the show, a bit into that realm. I'll do the best I can to present things that I think I know well enough to reveal tonight. There will be some things that either I don't know well enough or we are not close enough to having that revelation, because the science, as I understand it, at the present time, most of it being physics from tonight's show, but some of it in chemistry and other areas, in biology, will not be at a level in the near future to be able to determine the validity of it. That would say, and therefore I will continue to withhold that as my agreement is with others. Okay, let's go on. So we've got these beings that live in the cosmic astral universe, right? But as they grew to become able to go to the cosmic astral universe, because they started in a cosmic physical universe, possibly this one, but not necessarily. And they, when they get to the cosmic astral universe, they prefer to have the experiences of a different physical universe in most cases, but not all. So it's a little bit hard to understand. Why would someone who's already been through our universe want to come back and do something in our universe? Well, because what they're going to do is highly creative and it prepares them to become a god. And some choose the course of going to the universe they came from. Others prefer going to the universe they didn't. And it's a completely individual choice on each super being's part to do this. Now you could say, but their consciousness is in the astral universe. You already told us that. How is it they're going to gain anything? Well, they're going to gain a new sense that they integrate into the greater consciousness that they have now in the cosmic astral universe that they didn't have while they were physically alive, if they're even coming to the same physical universe or otherwise. And the process is such that it allows them to develop the ability to be highly creative of physical universes in a specific format, which we'll call the astral bent format. But it also means that they're seeing it through more of the astral universe's consciousness, which has nothing to do with our astral plane and is really unique beyond what we think of as the astral world to us. However, there is some slight similarities and correspondences, so that's the best I can do. Why am I not going to explain that? Some of it I don't know, literally, and some that I do know is too far ahead of where I think I could say something about at the present time. Call it quirkiness on my part, but I just believe that may be true. Okay, so here is the answer to what they're doing now, because I guess, you know, we got the concept, but what is it they're doing? Okay, well, beings that are creating in our universe, they come in several different levels of consciousness, but I'm going to start with the, we'll say, more astral universe beings. They seek to create a system, we'll call it, of planets that promotes a specific kind of life that they are interested in developing. Okay, so they are into the planet production business. Yep, they are. Now, some seek to develop planets that are very much like Earth, which is fairly rare, by the way, and more difficult, quite difficult planet to develop life on, with, in some circumstances, a fairly high rate of failure. Failure means that the life on the planet ends up being destructive to the planet itself instead of constructive to God and to these beings' consciousness. Now, they don't necessarily, they don't keep or prevent the destruction or the completion and development successfully of a planet. That's not their job. Their job is to provide the kind of planet that is, in their creative effort, going to do the very best job considering a much wider plan of our God, the universe of the physical God of our physical universe, and some of the higher beings in our consciousness within our physical universe who have their own plan. So, and because the consciousness of these great beings that create the planet are outside of our universe, they don't really directly, in a conscious way, communicate with these beings. They communicate through the kind of planet that they create. And you could say, well, didn't God create Earth? No. No, God did not create our Earth. God creates the structure overall, the universe, and allows these particular beings to create some planets. Wow, that's pretty strange. Now, some of these beings want to create physical planets, like I said. Others of these beings have a bent, we'll say, to creating planets that are much more astrally, dimensionally in form, but not physical, and they do exist that way, depending upon the star system that they're in, and it's a complicated equation. And then some of them create planets that are literally only for mental development in a particular star system's development itself and for certain stars. Whoa, is that not complicated? Okay, yes, it is. But if you think about what I'm saying, it isn't that complicated. And this is covered in Lightshed Meeting in a kind of quick way. Okay. Chapter 9 is about the closest you're going to get to it being explained in the way I'm doing it. Or in Chapter 4, there's some slight issues too. All right. So, this is their overall, we'll say, focus. They choose it. Got it? Okay, they choose it. Sometimes based upon how they went through the physical universe themselves and became what is known as ascended monads, which I'll explain monads in a little bit here. They became ascended monads, and they usually pick a very different kind of planet than the means of ascension that they did while they were in the physical universe. Usually. As a matter of fact, that's common. Whether they are from this particular physical universe or not. So this is the common denominator. But in some cases, if they pick a very, very different kind of physical universe, and they do get different, they may pick something very close to the way they went through it because this universe, if they came from this universe, because they want, or they still could be extremely creative because the universe is that they are dealing with is so different than the one that came from. So there's lots of options, as they say, if you're following everything I am saying. And this is kind of a basis for how life is developed. Now, the monads are kind of connected to the sun or something. You're talking about the planet and all this business. Ah, yes, the monads. Well, there's another group of beings as a class or a group of beings that are not usually as advanced in consciousness as the beings I'm referring to first from the cosmic universes of astral kind or definition. And these beings are usually fairly newcomers, we'll say, to that universe, and have a unusual, sometimes we'll call it ability, to be almost in consciousness at two places at once. And you can say, well, are all of them like that? No, because this is a whole new idea, a revelation. Ooh, here it goes. All right, so you got to stay with me on this, since you probably haven't heard this before. This is going to be like, oh boy, what is he talking about? When some beings go through a physical universe and they reach the point, what is known as the second and then the first logoic realm, they have within them the ability to create a virtual reality going to the end of the universe. And they have joined all three parts of time with space. They literally go to the end of the universe based upon what they have created up to that time. They find that to be a thrilling and great creative effort. God is the accumulation of all ascended monads as they leave the universe, which eventually is all life, by the way. All beings, all life. It's such a huge number, I can't even. It's trillions and trillions of beings. As they leave the universe. So God becomes the aggregate in exponential terms of all the beings as they are growing through the universe, all life in the universe. God's growth is the accumulation in exponential terms of all this experience. God is experiencing things that are too wondrous to even conclude. Well, some of a considerable number of the beings that go on to a cosmic astral universe have, based upon how they want to proceed in their development and creation, want to also experience the element of further creating in the universe they either came from, or in many cases a new type of physical universe, and do so in a completely different way. Yet, because they do so in a state in which they're not fully living, I know that's hard to understand, but if this is written in stuff I've written before, and I've taught this many times, you may have heard me, they're not fully life forms. So they have a unique ability, because they're not fully alive, they can live in two different places in consciousness at the same time. They are much more fully alive, in theory. And again, this is iffy for me. This is one of my iffy places. In the cosmic astral universe, where they actually have interactions with other beings in that universe at levels that are pretty, we'll say, dramatic by our standards. But life is something we can't conceive. I don't know for sure what they're doing when they hang out, okay? Because they're so far behind anything I can imagine. But then they have a simultaneous life as a monad. Now, what is that? Well, a monad, when part of them comes to our universe, part, in consciousness, and it chooses not to take on any energy or form within itself until it becomes ascended. And that's going to be tens of millions, hundreds of millions of years. Who knows? I know it's me. And it just that part of them, its main job is to help create souls and spirit and energy for the rest of the physical universe in cooperation with beings from a place called the cosmic mental universe, we're going to get to that, who are creating stars. What? Okay, yeah, I got it. Didn't lose you yet? Okay. I hope I didn't. So let's say that again so that we can kind of make sure that I'm not losing too many points. So some beings, and it's actually a fairly large number, that come from cosmic physical universes, some of them from ours, choose to come back. Now, why would they choose to come back? Well, because their experience from the angle before them was only in a vertical direction. They were just going up, so to speak. Now, part of them didn't have this experience, and so they had a little bit of what I'm talking about, of the monad going down. That was called the solar angel, and they joined together at the point. But the point is that the monad has a totally different experience. Its experience is to create energy in the spiritual world, or the spiritual plane, the atmic plane, and that it doesn't deal with directly on its own. This energy will be used by life forms that it helps to create through souls and its solar angel, which is an energy being, and other even lower energy beings who are working all together to create life in the lower realms where the monad actually doesn't travel to, but has the unique experience of doing this amazing, we'll call it, replication of God. Huh. But you've got to realize something, and this is the hard thing to understand, that this, even when it does this, its experience is not all-encompassing of the universe that it is doing this in, the physical universe. It's still a relatively unique venture, even though it's working together with a group of other monads and sharing thought, and it isn't sharing experience. It's sharing thought, but it's not sharing experience. And so most of its experience in the lower world through a monad that's non-ascendant is one of vicarious experience and of unified thought. When a monad does this, it cannot completely experience all that it is involved in. And again, the ascended part of the monad, which is a solar angel, some people call them a master of the angels, an advanced, super advanced human being, super being, that being joins with the monad and becomes an ascended monad, but the being itself, the monad itself, only gains the experiences in the lower world of that combination. And so to increase its experiences and to give itself a greater foundation, going through this cycle more than one time is of benefit, and it's enough of a benefit that it doesn't interfere with these beings' lives who have an ongoing life in the astral universe. They are simultaneously living in two different universes, having completely different kinds of experiences, and their consciousness is able to do this, which is something that's hard for us. Completely fathom. But it's no different in a sense than a master who lives in three lower worlds or four lower worlds at the same time, and eventually five or more. So this is a kind of unusual situation. Also, they get to pick what planet they're going to be because they're picking what star they're going to be on. And so it gets into a whole creative thing. It's almost like picking out a unique wardrobe. Now, to us, that wardrobe could be 100 million years, but or less, maybe 10. But the point is, it's a long time, and some of these monads do it for different kinds of life. And there are monads that are along three different kinds of re-energies that focus on this. They don't actually specialize into the remaining four rays of attributes. They only specialize within the three rays that are of God, coming from God's mind directly. So those rates have the we'll say the dominant element to each of the monads choosing of what it's going to be doing, and therefore the being that is helping to be conscious through that monad in another universe, the astral universe, the astral plane, that being has a lot of choices. I mean, literally, if you think about it, it's very complex in choices, and it can choose. Maybe it came through the universe along a first ray monad the first time, and now it's going through on a second ray. You didn't know about monads having those different entrances. Well, it's slightly mentioned, yes, in licensed meaning, but not a lot. So, yeah, there is a difference, and the differences are pretty great when you get to the types of life forms they create, and I mean, it's a whole big gamut. Even what planet they are likely to be on. Earth is an example of a third-ray planet. Not every monad by any stretch is a third-ray monad, but it has to do with the kind of experience those monads are going to have. Quite complicated, I know. But I didn't say the universe was simple. I just said it's very creative and interesting. All right, let's get to the star business. Stars are created by beings from the cosmic mental universe. Okay. And there's a similar correspondence to how they're functioning. They create a body of a star. And there are three major types of stars that create life. The first is a star that doesn't last that long. It just kind of like burns itself out real fast. And some of them create most of the things that we think of as the elements of the seventh subworld. And these stars manifest themselves not just in the physical world that we're familiar with, but also the astral and the mental. Now, they're different. They appear somewhat differently in the mental and the astral than they do in the physical. They're actually the whole part of our universe is bigger in those parts because there's other extra dimensions. So the star looks in some respects bigger. It has features that are not consistent with what we think of as a star here in the physical universe. Our star in the physical universe is extremely hot and energetic. The stars in the astral world are much cooler, and they are, most of them, pinkish rather than blue-white or white. By our standards, there are white variations, and there are even some stars that are more yellowish, like our sun, and there's all kinds. But the sun is really quite white in reality, but it's got the slight tinge. And there are some stars that are very bluish, and some that are very red. But those differences tend to be at different stages of each of these kinds of stars that I'm talking about. So the stars, they change their color variation as they change in age. But there are these classifications of stars. And the first classification literally may not last more than 10 million years. But some of them, the class 1As, the kind of special class 1As, actually blow up. They become big bang boxes, and they make all the elements that we're familiar with, and the elements become part of a galaxy. And they feed the galaxy with elements that are necessary for life in the physical world. And remember, all life has to start in the physical world. Some people forget that, but you can't really start life in the astral or mental world. You've got to start it here, and they're working way up, so to speak. So this is very important to understand that these stars are coming from mental beings, but the star itself has bodies in the astral and mental planes of the physical universe at the same time, even though the being is in the mental cosmic universe. And it's having its own life in the mental cosmic universe, just like the monads are, but it's having a life here mostly by the experience rather than consciousness factor of being a star of a certain kind. A lot of these beings, when our universe is young, which it still is relatively young, make a lot of the elements. And the elements are necessary in the physical world. And so that's where we are. We're in the physical part of dimension of our universe. These elements are what most of physics focuses on. I mean, this is so strange because I'm talking about physics in a metaphysical sense. That means beyond present-day physics. And yet, modern-day physics, or standard physics, is mostly about these elements and the subparticles and particles of those elements more than anything else, and something about, in terms of fields and energy, how there is something called quantum fields that have an effect on these elements, and even more importantly, possibly, if you're into string theories, that there are connections between elements and other dimensions of time and space, where the elements are represented in different ways, more by vibration than particle form. As a matter of fact, almost exclusively by vibration rather than particle form. And this changes all of the physics of the astral subdimension in our universe and the mental subdimensions. Mental sub of the entire universe. When I talk about sub-sub-dimensions or sub-dimensions of those dimensions. Okay. But so the astral dimension of our universe has mostly a domination of waves rather than a domination of particles. And it comes from our universe mostly comes from that. So now, great. So we've got beings that are out into some vast number of mental universes, and some of them are making certain kind of stars, others are making other kind of stars. And basically, the mid-range of life stars, the kind that our sun is starting to like, can last about 5 billion years, which is as long as the planet Earth has been around. And beyond. They can actually last as long as 6 to 8 billion years, although they sometimes calculate our sun as lasting even longer than that, although I don't think it's presently understood that that isn't going to happen. But we're not getting into that again. That may be beyond the present ability. And so this is a cute little thing as a sideline. Our sun is stable. It changes only by 20-30% its heat output and certain other things for a very long time, which is it promotes a physical world life and it allows life to do a lot of things. Planets around the second kind of stars, I mean the first kind of stars, well, if the star blows up, obviously they're not going to last very long. And even if it doesn't blow up, those stars fizzle out in tens of millions of years, sometimes, which doesn't allow much life to be developed in the physical world. Interestingly, there can be life on the planets in dimensions of the astral and mental and even Buddhist realms that we're unaware of while we're physically alive, that are doing all kinds of things, but not, and mostly the things they're doing are beyond our understanding. And sometimes beings from our planet head off to those far reaches of new kind of stars to do things in dimensions of time and space beyond the physical. When they do that, they're doing it for specialized creative reasons. And they are leaving the hierarchical part of their prior life and joining some new and very different way of we'll call it life creation. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to take a break for right now, let you cool off. And when we come back, I will continue with this revelation of the esoteric universe. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, if you just joined us, you're going to have a fun ride. We're talking about the revelation of the esoteric universe, and I'm doing it, I'm trying to do it as slow as I can, based upon my normal fast-paced way of teaching things, but I let everybody know that some of the areas I'm pushing on my own ability to explain, and as well as there's some things that are still not ready to be revealed, and I may deliberately avoid those. Deliberately. But if I don't avoid them, you're going to hear some serious revelation, especially like what is dark energy and what is dark matter. I'm going to tell it as it really is. And that means that I expect that somebody out there within the next few years, I'm not talking about decades, should be able to prove what I'm saying if they so choose. I can't force anybody. I can't twist anybody's arm to try it. But we've got equipment now. We're on the verge of being able to prove what I'm going to tell about. And it's not inconsistent with what I've written in the textbook, in case you've read that and you have some ideas about it. Okay, that's only a little tidbit of, teasers. All right, so we're talking about beings who create stars that are in the cosmic mental universe. Now, did they go through the cosmic astral? Not necessarily. This is a little different than what we're familiar with in terms of the human experience. These beings are so far advanced that some will just say, hey, I don't need to go to the cosmic astral universe. I think I'll hang out in the cosmic mental universe. Can they go into some other existence? Far into what we would consider to be our future, even choose to have a life in a cosmic astral universe after they've been in cosmic metal? Actually, yes. I don't know how many do that. Most go on to the cosmic Buddhic universe or even beyond. There is no requirements like humans have, pretty much, for becoming a soul, we'll say, ascending in soul consciousness to a higher dimension. That sort of stuff is really a very human experience, but not the experience of beings that are out there attempting to become gods. And I mean gods as a god would be in our universe, which is the lowest kind of, we'll call it consciousness, a god can have, because it only involves three parts right now that we know of the mind of a being that has to create from those three parts the universe. No small thing anyway, but when you get to become a being who can create a cosmic astral universe, the mind of that being has more parts to it, as I understand it, and the universe itself is more complex, similar to what we call dimensions in our universe, but these are far beyond what we would understand to be dimensions. And so the cosmic astral universe is something that is not very easily explicable to anybody. It reaches beyond what most people would consider to be the experience that humans can understand. So from that standpoint, I won't even try to explain it. Even if I think I really could, because I don't think, again, it's not testable, and it's certainly, I don't know what good it might do for us to have that. And again, I'm not necessarily the greatest authority. So let's go on to that idea, though, that stars are coming from beings that are from a cosmic mental universe. Well, what about galaxies? This is amazing when you think about it. Galaxies. Well, before I get to galaxies, I should talk about groups of stars. And groups of stars within galaxies, we'll call them collective groups of stars, also have beings that work from both the mental world and in some cases, in not mental world, mental, cosmic mental universe, and the cosmic Buddhic or intuitional universe. These are so far beyond our comprehension. Remember, they're not the intuitional plane of this universe. This is a universe that's so far beyond that. All we can say is that the gods of those universes are vastly more creative of life, kind of lives we can't understand, than the god of our universe. Because the god of our universe is working its way up to that level. And the beings that exist in those universes, while they aren't at a god level, they can't even create a cosmic physical universe, they can create a whole group of stars that live in nebula, and some of them are literally the first kind of stars, and the second kind of stars. I didn't even talk about the third kind of stars. The third kind of stars, many times these beings are also a part of the third kind of stars in terms of the stars that they create, while they're also part of a larger cluster that they control. Wow, it's a little hard to understand. Third kind of stars end up being relatively small in size, but huge in power. Some of them produce some things that produce huge amounts of energy sources. It do some things that we'll have to talk about in a little while that involves dark matter and dark energy. But they all do this. And then sometimes they're called pulsars, the neutron stars. And then in other cases, they become what we call black holes. And there's a lot of them. And what are they doing? Well, this third type of star, which is a really advanced type, a black hole is recycling some of the energy that exists around and within the galaxies, a galaxy, and they do so to prevent too much collection of this we'll call it dark energy, and also too much collection of certain other kinds of energies that are not dark energy, from accumulating in more than one place, which would imbalance the galaxy. And so they are drawing it in, sometimes from around the outside edges of the galaxy, sometimes from right around the area where they exist. Depends whether they are giant black holes or just your average one. And what are they doing with this energy? They are recycling it back into the mostly the mental, but some of it into the astral dimensions of now our physical universe. They're recycling it back and putting it in places where it's supposed to go. Now you say, why does it have to be recycled? Because dark energy is accumulated in our universe from the eventual use of regular energy and from the accumulated effects of what we call dark energy. I know, I'm getting the teasers, okay. And so this energy needs to be recycled. Now, most physicists don't know this. They think that all the energy a black hole is taking in is literally coming from the energy that is sucked in its surroundings from stars that are dying and planets that aren't useful anymore, and just relics of all kinds of stuff, including some light that it entraps. And it's disappearing. Now, there's been some physicists who have suggested there might be a white hole somewhere, but they don't know where that white hole is. I'm telling you, the white holes are in the cosmic astral and cosmic universes. So what comes out on the other side brings some of the energy that would be imbalancing to particularly galaxies here, and that rebalances the galaxies, if you want to call them that. They're different in some respects, in the astral and mental worlds. And it's constantly creating a balance of these three worlds, from the mental subworld down. There is some intuitional plane activity going on, too, because some of the energies, the dark energy, is encapsulating large groups of stars, and some of that is actually going into the intuitional plane, and some of it is even reaching around the whole galaxy by, you know, 1,000 light years around the whole galaxy. So, or more, could be tens of thousands. It depends on the size of the galaxy and its age and other things. And some of this is being drawn through, literally through the galaxy, sometimes to a center black hole, which is many times, maybe millions of times larger than the typical black hole. And sometimes little pieces of it get sucked in by the smaller black holes, and some of it makes it into the center, and then it's taken in by the big black hole. And this is a normal way of making it all work. The movement of the dark energy through the galaxy causes the galaxy to spin. Didn't know that. Yeah. And galaxies that are very young, that don't have a lot of dark matter, don't spin much. And galaxies that are more like ours, we call it the Milky Way, or our neighbor also is called Andromeda. These galaxies, Andromeda is actually like a couple times bigger than Milky Way, so it's a little bigger. The Milky Way is a big galaxy, by the way. These galaxies have swallowed up a lot of other galaxies. They have a lot of dark matter, and they, because of that, are moving the galaxies. They're spinners. Other galaxies are relatively pokish. They don't spin much, and they may not be in the same shape, therefore, as these galaxies, which are kind of high-speed galaxies. Bigger galaxies, because they swallowed up the galaxies and because they have a lot of dark matter, can be fairly fast-moving. Now, the fast-moving, not because the dark energy moves them, but because the dark energy is being drawn in recycling form into the various black holes, which causes the movement. But it does do that. And the dark energy has an effect in gravitas, or gravity, in doing this. It's like you've got a big ball on a chain, and you're swinging it through water. Well, what is it going to do? The ball itself is resistant to moving through the water, but at the same time, it gets the water spinning if you keep turning it around, right? So you can think of it kind of like that, and especially if it's not only spinning around, but it is moving tangentially to the spin in towards the center of the galaxy. It actually leads to an inconsistent but faster spin as it's moving in, and it's doing some very strange things. So the outside should be spinning faster than you would think, but it isn't. It's spinning slower, and the inside is not necessarily in sync. And it could be reversed, by the way, from that, depending upon the age of the galaxy and how much dark matter we're talking about and how much the black hole is either eating in the center of the galaxy or not eating. And it's turned on and off by the being in control of it, which is the main being that is in charge of the whole galaxy, which we're going to get to. And that being is in the cosmic, we'll call it the cosmic, atmic, and above parts of cosmic universes. Wow. Holy moly. And then there is a being that's in charge of a whole group of galaxies. And they are, there's actually groupings of galaxies, and some of them are in the hundreds, or more, or larger, more. And these groupings of galaxies, now we're in like a group, I think, of 30, but some of them get a lot bigger now. These groups are handled by cosmic monadic universe beings. Okay, talk about big. Holy cow. And some of the dark energy that is controlling the groupings of the galaxies and also gets them to spin around each other is going all the way into the monadic plane of the physical universe. Okay, I know. You can listen to the show all over again if you want, because it's, you'll say, how much further does it go? It's a lot of thought, you know, big pieces. Okay, I got it. And then, if you really want to get far out there, there actually is a cosmic, logoic universe, where all the beings are endlessly creating new universes. But they also control those new universes at various levels. And they do so by controlling the entire universe, not just a group of galaxies, but all the galaxies and all the time, space, and energy of the universe at the same time. Wow. This is big. All right. So all that is cool, and that's all happening, right? That's happening. Well, what about cosmic energy? Because if we talk about cosmic matter, it's really about galaxies. At the most, it's about groups of galaxies. It's not about the strange effect of cosmic energy. We call it that, and it may not be that far off, by the way, use that word. But what is it doing, and what's it? All right, you ready for this? I know it's 8 o'clock, and it's time to put here, right? Because I got it. We're going to go a lot further with this, but I want the basics to get down here, and it's taking more than just the 40 minutes I usually, or 39 I devote to it. All right, so here's where the bottom line comes with that. Here it is, 8 o'clock. I should have said I was going to say this, but we're playing it that way. Okay, dark energy is the energy that is continually being put in to the lower dimensions. It's the reverse of dark matter. It's being put in for the purpose of growing new parts of the universe outside of the Big Bang. And you say, well, you've talked about the Big Bang, but I didn't know that there was that. And I said, well, you got to look at Chapter 4 because I do explain it. I talk about the Big Bang and that it did start the universe. But I said the universe continues to grow, And it's a weird thing. There was a guy in the 1650s who created this concept of, guy, his name will come to me, poor guy. And he was so big in this, in the 50s was a big deal, that there was continuous creation of energy and matter in his theory. And he was being conflicted by so many people saying, now it's all just a big bang. And I have for a long time said it's both, but the poor guy was eventually shot down, maybe a bit early. Was it Watson? His name will come to me. And the poor fellow was finally shot down because the astronomers decided that they liked the Big Bang as being the right model because it explained so much of particle physics, which was just coming online in a big time. And it also fit into some of quantum physics, but not all. And it was enough for people to come up with a model called the Standard Model, which was being supported by the Big Bang theory. But unfortunately, both are true. So there is a continuous creation of energy, which we call dark energy, and that continuous creation is eventually becoming dark matter, which becomes part of galaxies, in a sense. But the dark energy is not connected to galaxies. As a matter of fact, it's between and not part of where galaxies are. And it tends to follow a line of maybe thousands of galaxies in its expansion. It allows new galaxies to be developed from nothing. Now, how do we know that that's true? We are just on the verge of being able to prove what I just said. We have just taken pictures of the whole universe. We know where most of the galaxies are right now. But when new ones come online, even within my lifetime, I might get vindicated by what I'm saying, right? Because where did the energy come from that the new galaxies developed from? It did come from the Big Bang. You got what I'm saying? So if you're a scientist, and especially if you've contacted me before and you've had this question, there, I gave it to you. But here is the point. Once you got this idea, everything changes about the physics of our universe. Everything. And you start being able to understand extra dimensionality a bit better. Start understanding why quantum physics has some strange ideas to it. You may understand how evil works, which I'm not going to go into tonight. That's still too far, and I don't want people to know it yet. But as I said in Life's Hidden Meaning and a few shows, evil can communicate across the entire universe in a second or two. How does it do that? Certainly faster than the speed of light. We always think of the speed of light as being absolute and way better than anything evil could do, but evil does something that no light being can do. Well, it involves this dark energy. That's why I said it may be appropriate to call it that. Not that dark energy is evil. It is not. It's there to create new galaxies in a future that we don't even comprehend at this point. And no, the universe is that going to grow cold and die out, if you understand what I'm saying? Eventually, it'll be absorbed at some point and collapse into, expand into the astral dimension. The astral dimension will eventually expand into the middle. And that's how the universe goes through its cycles. And there could be another Big Bang, but not for long. Now, what about this idea of infinite number of multiverses? Well, it doesn't happen because the God of each universe selects and creates that universe and excludes vast amounts of chaotic possibilities. And I know that the chaos people want to say, well, why God has all those chaotic universes when no life could possibly exist? Why do that? Well, because there is an economy and efficiency to the production of life, and that would be silly and stupid, and even would be supportive of evil. So it is a strange thing to consider. But here is the bottom line. Most of the field, the grand field of infinite possibilities, is ignored by different gods. They create, by a specific creative design of their own, and it's vast by our understanding, but it's very minimal in comparison to the infinite possibilities. Now you say, well, didn't you say half? They have to control half of the field? A field from the infinite is still a fraction, not a half. It's a half of the field that they create from. The reason I say that is because, and I couldn't write this in my meaning because it was way too far beyond what I think people would grasp at that time. Maybe today as well. But remember, we're only talking about the God of our physical universe. That God is relatively, and this is not a demeaning statement, relatively small in terms of creation of life in comparison to the God of the logoic cosmic universe. That God may be getting much closer to half of the infinite possibility. Our God is only capable of the infinite possibilities of physical universes that could be created. And that's a very, very minute level of the infinite, infinite possibilities. That's what I didn't exactly explain before. Why not? Well, it's, again, who's going to even understand it, and especially if you don't know what dark energy is. When I first wrote this stuff, they didn't even know dark energy existed. And dark matter was a kind of small blip on the radar screen that for 10 years people have been conjecturing about with no proof. That's when I wrote about this stuff. In the beginning, the first articles. And actually, Vice and Meaning was written, I know the publishing date was 99, but it was actually written in 93. So, you know, the spring of 90. So when you look at this from that standpoint, you can start seeing, well, wow. No wonder this guy didn't explain it. There would be nobody who would get any of this, and we'd think he's a total nutcase, so why bother? Okay. But I did say that someday a lot of this will come out, and it won't be that far into the future, and here we are, 2013, and knock it on the door. All right, so the dark energy is the resource for creation of new eventual stars and galaxies. And we're just starting to turn the corner on that. How do we know that? Because the number of stars that are creating basic elements is dropping significantly while we watch the universe. I'm not kidding you. We have not been watching it for more than a decade, and it's and really since 2004. So what is going on? Well, what we're seeing is that the number of these stars is already on the decline. That doesn't mean the universe is on the decline. Certainly not so short a time. It just means that all the space that's between these strands that we think of is going to eventually fill up with new streams of new galaxies coming from dark energy, which eventually will develop into dark matter around each of the galaxies and around each of the groups of galaxies. Whoa! The dark matter is energy that is stuck to the form of galaxies. Dark energy is the opposite. It's repelled by the form of galaxies, and it continues to widen the space of the entire universe and continues to create new galaxies that are more and more interconnected through more strands of galaxies that it builds, but at the same time are, we'll say, unique and more individual than we could imagine by today's standards. Okay. Now, I will say a footnote here about evil, because, you know, I guess I talk a lot about evil because I'm concerned about Earth, which has a serious inclination towards going that way. But evil is attempting to reverse what I just said. So evil would like to have a universe that expands forever, becomes colder, and dies off. It thinks that's cool. I don't know where it's coming from, really, because it wants to destroy God's growth, which is life, and try to get all the other folks who don't know better to think God doesn't exist. But it's part of the life. Come on. Wake up. Go figure. Because it thinks it can become godlike and replace God and make its own life vitalized by its extreme power. Problem with that is it doesn't have the ability to create life itself. It uses God still in that process, and dark energy, by the way, and stars. It uses all those things. So what happens if it could really get rid of those things? Like I said, go figure. I know that some of you think I'm a nutcase saying all this. Well, I don't believe there's evil. Okay. Well, you will someday. But the point is that this thing doesn't even make sense, even to the, I think, even to the folks that are evil, if you really get them into a point where you could try to have a discussion. Not to say that you could, but there is some level of communication that can happen, and there is a hope that at least some of the evil in the universe can be, assuaged to change its course on its own because it's so ridiculously dumb. It just doesn't have any clue of what it's doing. But it's so arrogant that it thinks it knows more than me or anybody else who would try to say otherwise. All right, so here we have dark energy, a fascinating thing that is constantly expanding the universe. Now, what does it mean to expand the universe? Well, in order to expand the universe, and if you're a physicist, you can understand what I'm saying, you have to increase the amount of energy. Now, you can say, why is that? Why can't things just be moving out along themselves from the Big Bang? Because the amount of energy is, strangely, by our standards, used up. Now remember, these energies are coming from higher dimensions of time and space, from the atomic plane down, as explained in the fourth chapter of Life's Meaning, and they are coming from monads, who have only used a small fraction of all their energy, by the way, that they have created. They create the energy. We'll get to that, but maybe in tonight's show. All right. So here's the problem. The universe, in order to expand, it has to have another supply of energy coming from someplace in the concept of what we call the expansion of the physical dimension. But the only way to do that with the Big Bang theory is you have to add the constant rate theory with it, which just means you got to keep building, putting more dark energy into the system. Now, why is the energy dark, by the way? Because dark energy on its own cannot create stars. Stars require something that is unique in a process, and that is that the energy has to become particleized. Dark energy is only dark because it doesn't have particleization. Particleization leads to what is called a bright cloud effect, and eventually it leads to the production of atoms, subatomic particles of atoms. Dark energy is mostly wave. It comes from these higher dimensions, and in terms of the string concept, it's the other tail, the other side of the particles are all in waves connected all the way up to the atomic plane. And the waves are connected to the thought of monads, some monads, in the monadic world. So the monads are not only connected to stars, they're also connected to the expansion of the universe through this whole process that we're talking about. How much of the energy is constantly being flooded? It's a significant amount, because the universe is a huge place, and to keep it growing, you've got to be adding a prodigious amount of energy beyond what we think of as just the Big Bang factor. If, and the belief, the proof of this is, if you talk to any physicist who knows physics from more than 10 years ago, the universe was convincingly had to be shrinking and had to be eventually reaching a point of homeostasis and shrink because it came from a Big Bang, which was waning. That's a fact. And if you know how black holes work, you know that energy is being removed from the universe at a significant rate. And also, if you know about particleization, you also know that some particles are just disappearing, literally, from a thing called the zero level in quantum physics. It's just disappearing. And going to where? Well, going into black dark matter, and then it's eventually leaving our universe. But so all of this is going on. I know I could go really deep into the physics of this thing, but I'm not trying to do that. I just want to give enough ideas so that people who are into physics will explore what I'm talking about. So, okay, so we have the dark energy that is coming from the dark matter, and it has its place. But the dark, the dark matter coming from the dark energy. But we have the dark energy now that is being pumped in. It is, as it expands, it eventually reaches a saturation point where it starts building a cloud-like effect. Now, I know this is hard to understand. And this cloud-like effect still cannot be seen. The light cannot escape the cloud, but the energy is building up to produce it. So we still can't see it from our vantage point. But it's happening in a number of places, even as I speak. And this cloud has in it subatomic particles that are connected to waves. They actually are vibrations coming from all the different planes. And these vibrations are feeding through what we will call a superstring of sorts into the particleization. Some people say, well, it goes through a Higgs process. Okay, if you want to call it that. As it develops particleization, it becomes gravitized. It develops gravity. The Higgs process is a fallacy of sorts. It has more to do with understanding what dark energy really is, and then Higgs becomes something different from what presently is understood. All right, I won't say any more than that. You guys that are into Higgs theory, you will see what I'm talking about. But here's the bottom line. Eventually, the particles slow down in their energetic form, because they're super energetic, even though we can't see them in the dark energy. And they slow down, and as they slow down, they form real beginning, we'll call it atoms, usually of hydrogen and helium and lithium. Those are kind of the big ones that stand out. A few other more complex atoms may come popping in and out, but they're really, their life expectancy is that much. And then those eventually form into what are known as protostars. They're not exactly a galaxy of stars either. And they can get swallowed up by some galaxies if it's done near the galaxies, but most of the time they develop into their own galaxies. Wow, fascinating. And then we can see them. As soon as this protostar actually ignites itself and through its massive gravitational field, because remember, all these particles are developing energy, gravity. A massive gravitational field ignites them into becoming nuclear, and then they are stars, and they light up, and we can see them. And as this starts happening outside of where we can see this going, not happening right now, we will become aware of everything I said. And how soon is this going to happen? As we are mapping, we have mapped the whole universe. We just aren't comparing. We haven't had enough time to compare. I mean, it's only been like 8-9 years. Enough time to compare the old with the new. But as we go along, eventually we're going to discover what I'm saying is true, and it could happen within the next decade or two. Wow. So you can see I can talk about this now. What did we need? Well, we needed a telescope, and we have one that can do this in outer space. It's doing the mapping, and it's not doing enough comparison mapping. We need a few more telescopes like it, and then we have to compare what was with what is, and suddenly someone's going to say, "Hey, look at this. There are stars suddenly appearing from no place. Oh, it looks like they're going to form galaxies. Where are they coming from? Well, they're coming from the clouds that we can't see because all the light's trapped in the clouds and can't get out." And all this actually did happen when the universe was started with the Big Bang, but then it happened on a bigger scale initially. But over time, the constant rate will be greater than the Big Bang was. At least it's great, but I think it will be greater based upon my calculation. Not that I'm a great mathematician, but I know something about math, and I believe that what I'm saying is correct. So it's a fascinating idea, isn't it? We're not even near the end of our universe. We're just getting warmed up, as they say. And the universe is going to become larger and more. Right now, it's mostly vacant. If you look at all the little strings, look at a map. I could go online and look at a map. It's all going to get filled in, and it's going to get weaker. And the other thing is, it may become more flattened as it does. In the beginning, it was more roundish, and now it looks like a flying saucer of us. It's got a saucer shape. And eventually, it's going to look almost like some of the spiral galaxies. The whole universe will take on that kind of an appearance because in our three-dimensional perspective of it, the dimensions are really only one. You've heard me say this many times. The three dimensions we think of as three dimensions are an illusion. We actually live in one dimension of time and space that are subdivided. But as all this comes to pass, everything will become more one. And what is the one going to look like? It's going to look like a big round universe, but the round universe is actually going to be, it's going to have almost an infinite number of single lines going through in each dimension, in each section of it, into almost an infinite number of sections. So the whole thing will become inside and out one. Inside and out one. And the three dimensions we perceive right now are only caused by the great spaces between things. But as this all gets super enlightened, it becomes a big ball of light of one, the entire universe. That's what the universe is going to look like. But along each plane, that's what we're seeing. We only can perceive it right now. It'll look like three dimensions. Unless you can get outside that universe, and maybe from the astral side of it, or you have consciousness that can see the whole thing, and you'll see what I'm talking about. That's what it's going to look like eventually. It really looks like that now, except we can't see the dark energy, so we don't see what I'm talking about. Okay, how's that for a revelation? People are going, huh? Okay, yeah, it's really like that. I know it sounds a little bit far out, but that's how you would see it eventually, and it will be visible. Not to us, no, that's going to be way in the future, but we'll start seeing little pieces of it here and there, just in a couple of decades. All right, so what does all this mean? Why is it like this? I mean, talking about a description of this nature is interesting, but why? Well, because God is far more, far greater in its development than we perceive, and so we limit ourselves into, you know, well, there was a Big Bang, a start, there's the middle, and there's an end. Yeah, it's way more to the whole universe than that, and you've got to start including things beyond the physical side. We're stuck in the basement trying to figure out what's going on in a penthouse. There's no way. You've got to be able to see it from God's side, a spiritual side, and no physics we do today will do that, because the physics of today is almost anti-spiritual, and it's non-spiritual completely, almost anti-spiritual, depending upon who you talk to. So, I mean, this is the problem. We're not getting near the truth by that model, but that people want to buy into it because They want to have a universe that doesn't have God in it. Well, why would you want a universe without God? Well, because you don't understand God. If you think God is a one-dimensional being that came out of the Judaic and later Christian Bible, or some other Bible for that matter, then you have a very limited viewpoint based upon the consciousness of beings, human beings from thousands of years ago, who couldn't understand anything more than that explanation anyway. Not to say that it would have been worthwhile, and it would not have been worthwhile. It would have been confusing and supplied almost no foundation for any kind of belief in God to those folks. If you started telling them what I'm telling you tonight, they'd just be talking, even though you could talk in their language, it wouldn't mean anything to them. It would be totally misunderstood. Even a little bit that was explained, scientific principles in angel's wisdom, say by Jesus in the upper room 6 weeks after death. I mean, it depends what you call death. It was an etheric form. That was all misunderstood. And then you have different folks writing about some of that, some of whom never met Jesus, of course, or even when he was in etheric form. And most of them, if they're in the present version of Christian thinking, weren't even alive. When Jesus was. Mark was written in 100 A.D. Okay. So, think about that. So, just try to explain that sort of stuff. And he did, in my opinion. If you read the Apocrypha, the parts of the Bible that are thrown out, most of them in 325 AD, but some others before that. And some of the Gnostics threw stuff out, but they kept some things, and others, I mean, it kind of jumbled up. But if you read that stuff, you start beginning to understand that, wow, there really was a lot more explained about angels' wisdom, but it got left out. Just plain left out. And most of it was science. Of sorts, and that's what confounded the people of the day and age. They wanted to have a political influence over the population because religion ultimately was used by people in power, kings, and emperors, and that sort of stuff. And so they didn't want any science in there. They wanted, this is the way it is, and you've got to listen to us because we know. And so religion becomes an arm of government in some cases, and certainly an arm of those seeking to control us. Now, it sounds almost like Karl Marx, and it is. Religion is the opiate of the masses. But it doesn't have to be that way. It also gives people a way to experience God, and some of those ways, regardless of the misuses, are very helpful, because some people can't get any closer. They can't understand the things that I'm explaining tonight. Or they certainly couldn't have thousands of years ago, or even hundreds. And so humans have become much more conscious. They're growing in their mental thinking ability. History doesn't reveal this sometimes to us. But that's the truth. And so, on the average, humans from 2,000 years ago just couldn't understand this stuff. There were some brilliant people, brilliant of many. And Jesus was one of them, by the way. But that understanding is of a narrow few. We're talking maybe far less than maybe a tenth of a percent of the population. It's just too small to make a significant difference in the way the general society functions. They may have been great scholars and even written some things that we, through the ages, have respected. But boy, they really did understand something. But most of the folks didn't. This was the rare bird back then. And there always are rare people who could do this. Fantastic. They pushed the rest of humanity ahead in this sense, with dragon. Okay. So, from that aside, we still struggle. We struggle with these things I'm talking about today. And I hope in posterity they will remain. We're doing the best we can to help that. But there's never any guarantee. The dark side certainly doesn't want that. That's why I encourage those people who have the inclination to be of some assistance with us, because if you want this stuff preserved, it may not be. Just because you hear it now doesn't mean it will be available 100 years from now. There's a lot of things working against that. So here's the bottom line. Yeah, if you really, really get what I'm saying, then this doesn't sound like a clear off the charts. This is starting to make a lot more sense. And dimensionally, you got to start looking beyond the physical world. The physical world is either three dimensions, if you prefer it that way, or one. And the astral doubles that dimension. The astral doesn't just add a dimension, which is the movement and speed, you might call it, of energies, the direction of speed. That one element of addition is the equivalent of the first three that we call width, depth, and height. And so the two together is a doubling right there. Yes, the element of time also increases by double. The past part of time is the only part of time that we can be conscious of in any moment while we're physically alive. You doubt that? Okay, try to think of the present as it is present. And then try to think of the future as it is present. You can't. You could try to think of the future, but then you're in the mental realm thinking concepts. But you can't experience the future or the present, directly experience it through sense. All you can sense is the past in the physical realm. Now, in the astral realm, you can experience, through sense, both the past and the present. So you can actually experience things as they are really happening while you can, if you're really conscious, while you can experience the past that produced what is causing the thing that's really happening all at the same time. That's a biggie, huh? But time is still not complete. That's only two-thirds of time. And it's the least, most rudimentary way to explain it. When you get to the mental world, you can gradually develop a sense of time that doubles by far, again, the two senses that I just brought into perspective. And you can sense the past, the present, and the future at the same time. The thing you can't do is create from those three very well at the same time until you reach, just starting at the atomic level, the very highest point of the mental world, and then going into the Buddhic world, then you can really do it. You can really do it. That's when you have controlled intuition. So it's a fascinating thing that time is its own dimension, and we have to recognize that. And as a dimension, it comes from and is a part of space. You didn't know that. Well, you should read Albert Einstein. Came up with that idea. All right, so it's an integral part of space, and it actually quantifies, it qualifies space, and space quantifies time. What do I mean by that? Time qualifies the space in terms of how much the thought that is affecting the energy within the space is bringing the energy back into a oneness with time and space. When it's doing that, it takes less time to use the energy to create something, and it becomes more intelligent in its actions. All right, I know, this is tough, chapter 10, all that crap. And then if you got all three parts of time going for you, you can literally, you could, be able to join time with space in three different ways at the same time, which produces a what is known as a mini now anywhere in the higher mental world, and eventually a completed now at the atomic level for the first time. But it's only for one person doing this, but it's still a big deal if someone can do that. And that's the beginning of intuition. So it's a huge change from the normal human condition to be able to do this. Almost all human beings cannot. So it's a really, and once you do that, mistakes stop, and all activities become intelligent rather than unintelligent, and you don't separate time from space. Now, why is space a quantitator of time, where time is a qualitator of space? Space quantifies time, where we say, oh, it's 1 hour, it's 5 hours, whatever, because it's a measurement of how much time it takes to move from one part of space to another. And the more that quantity goes up, the less time is joined with space, and more the quantitizer tells you that. When it takes no time to go from one part of space to another, no time at all, okay, then the quantifier of space is now one with time, and the two are inseparable. Wow. That's a big, big thing to say. And so, those that can produce light in the middle world, fully enlightened in the middle world, can create things in no time at all that are things in the middle world. Now, when you get to the Buddhic world, it isn't one person creating one thing. It's one person in connection to zillions of other beings eventually, but certainly millions in today's concept of the word million, of beings throughout our galaxy, say. And as far as Earth is concerned, a relatively few number, 100 or so, but you're involved with those beings all at the same time, and you are able to co-create, but you create in an individual level, but the other beings gain from your creation, even though you're the creator, all at the same time. And so you can benefit from a state of omniscience. Some of the omniscience actually comes from other worlds. In our solar system, some from other worlds outside of our solar system, but within the group of stars that are belong to it. And then some of it comes from even greater levels than that. Smaller amounts, though, for folks, for human beings, and even those just beyond human to experience. But it's a truly dramatic change in thinking, because you're now thinking in what would be called intuitive, meaning that you don't have to create the concepts. The concepts are readily available, first in concepts that are about the three lower worlds, but then in concepts about the higher worlds where great beings, including God, are creating. And that goes beyond what is known as the rank cloud of knowable things. It's no longer knowledge. You're becoming omniscient beyond knowledge. So you have attained all the knowledge about the lower worlds, the mental and the astral and the physical dimensions of time and space. But now you start gaining understanding, consciousness, in realms far beyond that, as you move beyond the three lowest subdimensions of the Buddhist realm. Wow. Huge differences in the, we'll say, development of time and space. Now, how does that fit in with our universe? Well, once you get beyond the knowable realm of rank cloud of knowable things in the Buddhic realm, the kind of dark energy that we talk about is the energies that infiltrate and eventually reach the physical realm, is in itself already tempered by the intuitional thought and eventually the omnipotent thought of beings from those higher dimensions. And helped by monads as well, in some direct fashion. So it gives dark energy an innate high degree of, we'll say, propensity to be creative of life and intelligence. Now, to counter that, I don't want to break the bubble, but it sounds wonderful, right? I mean, it is truly a wondrous thing. But there is a counter to it, because the old evil dudes, in some quarters, have managed to, through a kind of opposite cooperation, one that is destructive rather than constructive, they work together in a kind of pyramid strange way. Think of it as the, if you want to call it this, the pyramid method of marketing darkness and evil. All right. sort of like pyramid marketing. And their choice is to use power to upset the formula that is coming from power being last and light, which is really creativity, freedom, with enlightenment from wisdom and love together, that is being, they try to overpower that with huge amounts, prodigious amounts of power, but a slightly lowering in consciousness continually and a tremendous destruction in freedom and creativity. Well, what happens to the dark energy? Well, on a very small scale, luckily today, at the present time, some of the dark energy does not go on to create dark matter. And it doesn't also go on to create much, if any, stars. And it does sometimes create a unique form of darkness in some galaxies. Instead of it being the kind of dark matter that's cooperative and gets recycled, it becomes a kind of dark matter that stifles creativity and growth and blocks out and extinguishes black holes. So there are no black holes. There's just this energy which overpowers everything and then eventually dies, including the life forms it creates. I told you that eventually evil dies. He doesn't want to believe that. That's what's going to happen. Okay. But in the meantime, the bad news is it creates chaos in some quarters of the whole universe, where dark energy is supposed to be doing all these good things, and sometimes it's faltering. Now, how do we know where this is happening at? If there, eventually, through these maps that will be compared, you will see another revelation, you will see on the maps that there will be holes, gaps, where, sure enough, this may take hundreds of years to fully determine, but sure enough, there's going to be places that are just growing wonderfully, and the little strings are increasing, and all those slanted slices are happening that I was talking about in the big ball of light. And the whole thing seems to be working out great, but each slice, remember, is becoming like a flat part of the universe, own universe. But if you connect them all together, it's a big, round universe. But we see it only the way it is right now. Okay. And it doesn't have all of the slices yet. So some of those slices are going to have holes in them, where it's just darkness. And those darkness, dark holes, are going to be dark galaxies. There's only a couple right now, so you're not going to be able to see them readily right now. And remember, you only see them by the absence of the pattern, not by, oh, well, you can see the dark galaxy. You can't see it because it is the light. But you're going to see it by the absence of the pattern as we compare the development of the universe. And so that's how you're going to know. Remember I said this, if you're still around 100 years ago. Well, we all will be. You know, we're coming back. But I don't know. Well, let's hope that this gets preserved, because it's cute if nothing else. And if it's more than that, then they can say, well, it's good that we had that now, then, because maybe it will get used to create a new physics in the next 10 or 20 or 30 years. Because all of this has a lot to do with creating a new model of physics. A lot to do with. So remember that. All right, so now another revelation? Yeah, throw them up like popcorn today. Ooh. All right, so what's going to happen if you're not too far away from one of these big holes that's being developed by dark galaxies? Remember, there's only a couple. But they could pop up pretty fast if things particularly... Now, this is going to sound as ethnocentric as anything you've ever heard. If a few planets, just like Earth, fail, especially Earth. Holy cow! How could it be that much that we're in that part of the whole universe and that is that important? I don't know. I'm not going to even try to touch that one, because it does sound like I've got some kind of craziness because I happen to be on Earth and I think it's so important. But it appears that it is the case. There are very important planets that are experimenting with how to stop this growth of dark galaxies. And there are ways to do this. You need to be able to do it from the mental side of things, and it has to happen by a planet that is highly astral and dark. Oh, I think I know of one of those called Earth, and uses along the third ray, but it doesn't always happen. The sixth ray is another possibility. But it's usually in a very active planet. We're the most active of all of them. Where things are going very fast, and where darkness could overcome us at almost any corner of time, and we've got to grow faster than light itself and be able to produce enough of that light to stop this onslaught of pure evil that we're immersed in it even as I talk. And why is that so important? Because when that happens, and this is really going far out there, Revelation, when that happens, if it happens, let's assume it can happen, Earth becomes a sacred planet in a very, very short time. It's about hundreds of years of time. Can become a sacred planet from virtually on the verge of going completely evil. That causes a ripple effect that goes backwards through the galaxy, if you want to call it. Everything's in waves, remember. And that ripple effect is not just in the physical world, it's in the mental and especially, it's in the astral and especially the mental world. And that ripple effect leads quickly and out because of the mental world, light is 1,000 times faster than moving the minute. That's only, 180 years to go all the way through all the whole galaxy. And actually, from where we are, it's faster in some parts and slower in others because we're on an arm. But some parts, it'll go way far out into the dark dark matter. And as soon as it does that, it will release some of the hold that evil has on dark energy that it is growing in because of its effects in the reverse direction from Earth and a few other planets in our galaxy. If we can get together with those other planets, by the way, which is part of the plan, in my opinion, we could all do this in unison, I think we could drive evil out of our neck of the woods, which is a fairly big neck of the woods, by the way. We're talking hundreds and more, maybe thousands of galaxies. I know there's billions of galaxies. I'm not going to kid you. There's a huge number. But that's not the point. This is an experiment. It's not meant to change the whole universe. It's meant to be a model for a way to achieve a certain goal to drive evil not out of the universe necessarily, but into the corners where it can't really do much. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And the souls, us, that came to Earth to do this know about that. I know that we don't. I mean, of course, because we're not our soul, most of us. But the souls that came here do, because this is one of the hardest places to come, and they don't come here in ignorance. Not complete ignorance. I mean, there may be some ignorance. They got it. They know that they came here because they're up to the challenge. Many fail. Some become the evil people that were around us. But it's still, it isn't they that are evil. It's the incarnates. And the incarnates lose grasp and lose connection to that soul. And then become ensouled by the group soul. The object is to reverse that process. And to do so in a way fast enough and with enough reversal of power back into consciousness and creativity, that there's a balance between them, and the world becomes sacred and beautiful. That's the balance, is the sacredness, and we need to do that. Are we going to do it? You got a coin? Because that's about as good as we're going to get right now. All right, so I know a lot to talk about here. So we have a universe now that is tenuous because of something that we don't even see and hasn't gone very far, but because of its ability to escalate in a fulminating form, that means there's a sunlight that sprang up a lot of places at once, we're in a dangerous time. And Earth, of all places, has some significant levels of importance about what the outcome is going to be. No, it's not the only place. But in our neck of the woods, it could really make a difference. That neck of the woods maybe just be the 30 or so galaxies we're close to, or a few hundred more than that. But the point is, or up to 1,000 eventually. But the point is that it is special because so far, it has never happened. Okay, yep, I let the shoe drop. I know. There has never been, to my knowledge, and I've been told by some good sources that I believe to be true. I don't have direct knowledge. I mean, I know my alpha all over the universe, and they can tell about, you know, take account and everything. But to what I understand, and I think I have the greatest understanding of everything in the universe, but from my perspective, it has never happened. There has never been this, we'll call it cathartic change at the level the Earth is dark into a sacred planet in the short time we're trying to do it. It's a grand experiment. A number of planets have failed. Some of them not too far from us in this galaxy. I mean, not real close, but not too far. And it just has never happened anywhere in the entire universe. Yeah. There are sacred planets, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about that. They're huge numbers, and they're wonderful places. But it has never happened that a planet has been as dark or darker than Earth that has become sacred in the period of time that we're talking about. Why does it have to happen like that? Because evil is on the verge of this takeover with the dark energy to literally hold it hostage and make it into something else and stop the way the universe is supposed to develop. And that's a very bad thing. All right, now, I don't want to belabor this too much, but some of you are probably scratching your head and saying, how could I have come here? And where do I get off? I want to go to one of those sacred places and forget about the rest of this. We'll let somebody else do it, you know. Well, you see, as you go back to your soul, not right now, I know, and I can even believe a majority of people that are listening to me are saying, hey, I don't want any part of this. This guy may be right. Well, how do I get back to my soul quickly and go to one of the better places? Let this place, you know, if it's going to screw up, I don't want to be here. Okay, but here is the bottom line. We decide to stay, and we've done it hundreds of times. If you listen to the show, I don't think it's been less than 300, and honestly, it's closer to 6 for most of you. Oh, that sounds crazy. You think I'm nuts, right? Oh, go ahead, guys, salute it. No, I'm telling you, you've chosen to come back here that many times with the knowledge, at least most of what I'm telling you. But in soul consciousness, going back to your soul in the mental world, towards the end of life in the lower mental world, as you're about to join with your soul. And some of you did it before that, but most of you didn't. So here's the point. You chose to be here, and you didn't choose millions of years ago. You did then, too, but you did it. You did it, how old are you? That many years ago, that's when you did it. Yeah, right before you were born, you did it. And you're going to choose again, most likely. Are there some dropouts? I swear there are. Yeah, I'm not going to kid you. Maybe a fraction of 1% are going to say, you know what, I've had it. This place sucks, I'm not going back. And you go to a different world. The problem is there's some karmic consequences. And usually you don't go to the best place, but you end up in a place where it's not going to be so easy. Okay, you can get out of that part of it. But you may not go to a constant heavenly place because, after all, you're certainly not being noble, much less beyond nobility. Nobility is a human trait. You're certainly not following spirit, mind of God. Okay, but you have the right to do that. You have the right, we all do, as souls, to choose to not be here. Because every lifetime we create here in the incarnation is a choice. And it could be doing something else, honestly. As a matter of fact, a very active incarnation is a great sacrifice and choice. And there's no absolute mandate. Every soul do that. There really is freedom. Truly is freedom. Okay, so I probably upset some of you now because you said, well, I'm not going to do this. This guy's crazy. I'm not going to do that. But you will eventually. Even in the astral world, people change quite a bit. Some folks really get some of this, and they say, you know, I was silly. I was very fearful, very narrow. Maybe I believed in some kind of life after death, but I didn't really understand what it's all about. I could have really stood up for a lot of good, and I could have created a lot more good. So and that sort of attitude is a good attitude, because then you have a much better astral and eventually a way better life. And humility is the answer for getting it. The whole mental experience is to develop humility. The astral experience is just to develop love, which is not bad. Don't get me wrong. But then eventually the humility leads to a state of wisdom, and if you develop enough love while you're in the astral world, you develop a state of what is called love wisdom, where you give wisdom to your fellow soul-like beings who aren't quite souls with you yet, but you're very soul-like in the lower mental world when you finish your life. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. Okay, so let's talk about a dark energy in the astral and mental world. Boy, I don't have a lot of time. I'll do the best I can. I don't think I can cover this subject completely tonight. But for the physics people, you don't need to know that much about what I'm going to explain. I'll try to just stick with what you need to know to understand string theory, a new kind of string theory, the one that I'm talking about now. All right, so the wave part of the string, if you want to call it that, the particleization is not the primary emphasis of creation of energy and of life itself, is in the astral and mental world. And so, and it keeps going up. It goes beyond that, but I'm not going to probably make it there in 30 minutes, so we'll just have to bear with me. So speaking about dark energy in the astral world, because dark energy creates so much what we'll call as a movement, the people in the astral world can directly sense dark energy. We have no sense of it in this world other than what it does in a secondary fashion. Strangely, in the astral world, and I'm going to try to describe this as best as I actually experienced this, I didn't understand when I was there experiencing, and I have not gone there in a long time, what I was experiencing until I figured out this whole thing that I'm explaining tonight. And that took a little bit of time. It was before I wrote Life's Hidden Meaning, but it was way after most of my astral experiences. So let's talk about this. When you go to the astral world, as you try to project yourself into what we'll call the outer space of that dimension, you can reach to levels in which you can actually put yourself, and this sounds almost impossible, into outer space and even out of what we would consider to be our galaxy of sorts. Now, how could you be on astral Earth can do that? Well, the senses of people can be directed as far out of themselves as their consciousness can understand the sense. So, if you go out to the planet Mars, and you want to experience something about the planet Mars, as long as your consciousness would be able to have some understanding, not a complete one, but some, your sense could actually reach the planet Mars. Now, you can't go to the planet Mars unless you've been there before by recreating yourself. So that's why you're hindered, and you can't just go to the outside the galaxy. But you can sense outside the galaxy. Now, this is hard to believe. If you are at the second subworld or higher of the astral world, because the consciousness of people, some people, if they're working in group consciousness, sometimes can reach Buddhic levels of controlled intuition. And if you can reach Buddhic levels of controlled intuition, your sense can be extended to a part of the Buddhic body. And if your sense can reach the rain cloud of knowable things for planet Earth, it also can be extended to sense things as far as beyond the galaxy, outside of the embodiment of dark matter, and into dark energy. Now, I did this. Okay. Maybe I was hallucinating, but I didn't think I was, and I don't think I was now for sure, because I figured out what I was experiencing, and it all fits into what I'm explaining. So what you can experience is the following. Dark energy is tremendously more energetic. It's just that it's dark, right? And if you get into it deep enough, you experience a realm of actual lightness, not light, not the darkness. And suddenly you feel as though you are touching more of the mind of God, and you are in an experience that is a super consciousness for your overall state, which is generally, maybe at most, lower Buddha. You may have brief moments of this if you try to project your consciousness while you're in that realm, the astral realm, into that level. It's brief, seconds to like a minute of perceived time. But you do get the experience of it, which is dramatic. And it's experiencing a part of creation at a new level. Okay, I've also had experiences, some of you may not know this, in the middle world. And I've tried the same experiment from that perspective. Then I have reached as high while serving in the middle world, and only briefly being able to do this experiment, as high as literally the entire intuitional plane, reaching virtually to the atomic or almost the atomic level, the intuitional plane, again for a minute or two of perception. When I've been able to do that, I was able to reach levels of what I would call time-space, which was far beyond, at the Buddhic level, beyond the galaxy of existence. Of the Buddhic part of the galaxy, into galaxies that I think were outside or just touching on the limits of the group of galaxies we're a part of, and into certainly dark energy. Now, it's important to recognize that this is an experiential thing I'm talking about. I had no clue at the time what I was really experiencing. But the point is, I can say that what I experienced looking back on it is consistent with the models now of physics, or at least metaphysics, that I'm propounding at this point in this show, and have much more propounded in a more vast and more mathematical, more scientific way at other times and places. So this is the remarkable part of another revelation, I guess. Oh, boy, I'm all full of them tonight. That you can actually experience dark energy as a greater part of the mind of God, but it does have a preponderance of power as its source, much greater than anything other than consciousness and light in general. So you're overwhelmed by power, but it's contained within the element of being able to be conscious of what the power is. And so it gives one a perspective of God's, we'll call it, total, all-powerful beings. At the same time, how that lends itself through the atmic plane and beyond into a ability to create life. Coming back from the experience, even from a minute or two of perceived time, the result was, in myself, an appreciation of God as not only a being of, which I had already had, a being of grand creation and love, wisdom, and of tremendous spirit, therefore, but a new sense of God as a being of unlimited by my standards, but not truly unlimited, power. And the power wasn't the power of evil. It was the power to create good, the power to create form, and the power to make a universe of form that brings new life into existence that will eventually be all of it that its creator was. So it's a true sense of that I'm talking about. I had it in the astral world, and for a dozen or more times. And I had it in the mental world several times. And the reason in the mental world is most of the time you're serving, and it only happens is you might have a respite for a different issue that is happening with the people you're serving, so you could try this experiment frequently. And I did. Okay. So what does it feel like? What is that sense of power? The sense of power is the sense that you're limitless in the ability to create and love. Limitless in the ability to create and love. That is something I had never experienced before. I felt it in an emotional sense, emotive sense, in the astral world, and I... this is hard to explain. I became immersed in it rather than felt it. Immersed is more like I and it are one in through the experiences in the mental world. It was a more obviously increased perceptual experience. And I only wish that I'd had more than, I really think it was. From my memory, only three times that I did this in the mental world, but I wish I had had more time and more times to gain a better understanding of the experience. I think I would be better here than what I do at the present time. I'm having some problems with this in my life right now about the question of how one can have power and maintain the balance with spirit. It's not as easy as that. At any rate, so there are real practical issues that would have been of help to me. And this came from experiencing dark energy. Remember, we're talking about a real thing here that exists in these realms. Now, the dark energy in these realms is different than the one in the physical realm. It's the same energy, but it's the rest of it. What we're getting here is the particleized. In the astral world, there's virtually no particleization, and there's none in the mental world. So you don't have particleization. You have wave. And you could say, well, where is the particleization in the astral world? It's in the lower subworld. You stop having particleization for the most part when you reach the third astral subworld. And there's slight, very, very slight amounts there. And then you have none in the second universe. So it's all wave. You have everything, best way to describe it is everything in physics is really a wave. It's not a chicken and the egg, it's really a wave, but what we perceive as particleization is from a very, very narrow viewpoint due to condensing out of time from space, and energy is the what condenses from that. The energy of particleization. Energy still exists in wave form without being particleized in other parts of time and space. And then it isn't condensation of particles. It's the opposite. It may be rejoining the time and space. And now it's dimensional better than it's precipitating out. It is precipitating out to some degree in the fourth, fifth, and sixth, seventh subplanes and the sphere of the astral dimension. But not vast amounts of third or fourth subworld, but it is doing it to some extent. So you have these differences in the way that energy is being affected, and dark energy in that. Now let's talk about the dark matter factors quickly in these realms. In the astral dimension, the dark energy that is being brought in is more wave than it is particle. It has, therefore, much more potency in terms of being energetic. Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah, well, there's a thing, we refer to it in many ways in physics, as, you know, being inertia. But inertia is really particleization and gravity coming out of it from a wave. When you take a wave, which is, you know, it doesn't have definiteness of form, it can literally go through things, and it has all kinds of effects. That wave, when it becomes more particleized, it changes into developing gravity, which slows down the thought of the energy. Okay, that's a whole other thing, right? And the energy then tends to want to connect with other energy rather than to maintain its wave state. It loses a lot of its wave properties, and it becomes inertiated with form, and eventually the form becomes matter. Like that's here in the physical world. In the astral world, it never becomes matter. It just becomes dense astral energy. Now, dense astral energy does have particleization in it, and therefore it has some gravity to it, and it has limitation and destruction of sense for people who live in the realms where this is taking place. So their life expectancy is less, their senses are diminished over time, and gravity becomes the force that they have to deal with, as we do here in the physical world. But in the higher astral regions, this is less and less so, and through invention in the third astral subworld, they actually overcome a lot of the aspects of the particleization of gravity, but that's mostly knowledge-based. Whereas in the second astral subworld, speaking from experience, the consciousness of the person is the dominant factor, and the ability to connect with love and God becomes the dominant element in how the energy behaves in your body and in all the surroundings you create, because everything is created by the people that exist there and other living creatures to some extent. So the results are, but it's the people that do more creation by far than anyone. And so when we look at it from the physics standpoint, there's a lot of differences in we'll call it dark energy and dark matter. But the dark matter, as it's moving through things, is being a more of a wave. It produces less of a gravitational interference, and the dark energy has a greater and more energetic effect, which causes the astral world to be much larger in dimension, literally, than physical Earth is. That's hard to understand. So I've described this in Enlightened Meaning. You can go to chapter 8, I think, and you can see in there that it's explained that the astral world is vastly larger. It's the size of a planet, that is the size of the dimension of the diameter of the orbit of the moon going around Earth. It's a huge, that's a giant planet compared to Earth, right? Less the size of the asteroid in three dimensions. But there's a fourth dimension of how energy is moving, and that dimension is even more profound in the way that the dimension becomes a reality to the person who's living it. So it's so enormous, it's such a big place, that to our perspective, it's not really a planet anymore. It is a new something that's different than a planet to us. And the sun is expanded in distance away, but it looks larger. Now, how does that happen? Well, because the sun actually grows proportionally greater than the Earth does, from the dimensional increases, because the sun has more light in it, and the dimension it's growing from is a greater proportion of love than is the rest of the astral world. The astral world grows from love and shrinks from darkness. And so that's the reason for that effect. And interestingly, the moon also exists in the astral world, mostly because it exists in a only as in an energy form, almost only as a wave. So the wave energy of the moon exists there. It too looks bigger, and it too looks somewhat more distant from the Earth, even though the Earth in three dimensions is encompassing the moon in the three dimensions of the four that exist in the astral world. It's very hard to understand. So you could instantly be at the moon if you wanted to be in the astral world. That's about as far as you could be if you wanted to go to the moon. Now the question is, did you ever go to the moon? No, I didn't. Because to go to the moon, you have to be able to have full consciousness in the first astral subworld, and I only had that for a short period of time, and I never quite made it. And if you want to go to the far side of the moon, I have technically been there, but that's where the dark ones exist. I know that makes no sense, but it's a whole other story. And I was there to observe for various reasons. But I wasn't there. I didn't go there in my own consciousness. I was assisting. So but the experience of this is so hard to explain, and I'm sorry if I'm insufficient in my explanations. First of all, time is running against us in trying to describe this. And in addition to that, it's very hard to even imagine what the things I'm trying to explain. You can look it up in what I wrote. There's some diagrams there. It may help you understand what I'm talking about. Here we go. Let's try to wrap this up. Our whole universe is beyond, way beyond what we see through our grand telescopes and other things that we have put out in outer space to observe. The picture of the universe, as it presently is on the Internet and other places, is small in comparison to the whole universe in terms of all the dimensions that exist within it. And most of the universe is in, most of the form universe is, and I didn't realize that we didn't get to the formless parts, but most of the form universe is composed of literally wave. It's not composed of particleized energy. The wave part is profoundly different to live in than is the particleized. And the universe is growing enormously fast because dark energy is more affected by wave energy, by far, than is dark matter or regular energy. And so, consequently, it's far more energetic, and it is growing much more rapidly than the speed of light, by the way. And it is causing eventually an expansion of the universe at a speed greater than the speed of light. We eventually will reach a speed that will be commensurate with what is known as the inflationary period of the Big Bang at some point. This should not frighten anybody. It doesn't mean that all the galaxies will be super far apart from this, but they'll all be connected, will be connected by both dark matter, and by a union of light between a plethora, much greater number of galaxies, along these lines of galaxies that will eventually look like lines, not a bunch of spider webs all over the place, helter-skelter spider webs, and will eventually form a giant ball, but with planes in the ball, or vast numbers of planes, slicing through it, of galaxies virtually all connected together. They will all be connected through both dark energy and the light that they will create, provided that evil doesn't make a bunch of holes and mess up the whole thing, which I'm hoping to not see that. It is up to planets like Earth to prevent that from happening, and we have the opportunity to do that as I speak, and we will continue to have the opportunity for hundreds of years more, but not much more than that. If we fail, bye-bye Earth, and some of us will maybe try again in some other location. Others may say, I've had enough of this craziness, and I'll try to go on vacation to a nice sacred planet somewhere. And you may be able to do that if you stay. If you stay on Earth and things go bad for lots of times and you know, Earth is eventually destroyed, the reward will be probably for a while, got to rest sometime, to stay on a sacred world. And maybe with enough understanding of how to do it better in the future. The problem is the suffering that entails from these holes. And some galaxies will become isolated to some degree, where the common denominator is not isolation. It isn't all the galaxies are going to spin off and we're all going to not see each other again. Just the opposite is actually happening. Trust me, I'm right about this. You don't believe it, call me. We'll have a discussion. Let's talk about math. I'll show you the math that I'm right. And just remember, it's all coming from waves that are connected to higher dimensions of time and space, and it's much more energetic than what you're used to calculating in your particle theories. The standard model is nonsense. It's based upon illusion and what we don't understand, not upon real existence. I'm saying that to those of you who are into the physics of the modern day. All right, so if you're into metaphysics, you probably do have some understanding of what I'm talking about. Because metaphysics is just a physics beyond what we presently understand, that's all. On an average, and what science calls the scientists, who are not willing to look maybe beyond what is accepted. All right, so ultimately, the design, the God's design for our universe is that the physical part of the universe will eventually become completely enlightened. Everything in the universe will become alive and will be able to think and experience as one. When it is able to do that at the physical level will not collapse, but rise up into and become integrated into the astral. When it can do, when everything that can, same result can be happening in the astral, will rise up and become part of the mental. And the universe, instead of expanding out into all these dimensions, the seven that we know about, will eventually move back to becoming one logoic dimension for the remaining beings who have ascended, which will be all of life will be an ascended monad at that stage. The majority of existence will be just at that level. And very quickly, because this is slow at this point, but very quickly, the universe will become fully enlightened. The remainder of life, including the evil ones, will become fully enlightened and move on to another higher universe to experience that. God will become fulfilled as having enlightened countless numbers of life that has become an experiencer of God in completion by co-creating with God in completion. And we'll have a virtual reality of everything to the end of the universe, or we'll actually experience the end itself. And then God could go on and create another physical universe, or they decide to make an astral one if it finds that is the next place it wants to go. Because it's creating at the end of the universal spectrum. It's creating by being a member of the cosmic logoic universe where all beings in that universe grow infinitely and forever and are all gods. Okay, if you can get that, what I just said. Again, this is in Chapter 9. It's just a few pages. You can read it. It's somewhat understandable. Maybe after tonight's show, more so. All right, so what we're headed for is this unique experience. We are all going to eventually get there, some with little suffering, some with great amounts of suffering. Relative terms now. I'm not saying we're not going to suffer, because you suffer most of the time when you're in the physical world, whether you realize it or not. But it's a choice we make in each lifetime. We will make it through, even if Earth doesn't. And eventually, the cards are absolutely stacked against evil winning in this universe. By vast amounts. I can't go into the details of that because I'd have to explain how the Buddhic world and beyond works, and I don't have time for that tonight. But you just trust me, there is no way that I know of that evil can win it can only lose. Remember, even if you go by the understanding, they eventually are going to destroy themselves. You don't win by destroying yourself. Even if you destroy a lot of other things, you're not going to win, and you're not going to destroy the whole universe. Remember, they can make pockets, holes. Yes, great suffering happens around those pockets and holes, because whole galaxies cannot communicate with other galaxies. And eventually, parts of the galaxies can't communicate with in parts of the galaxy. Because they use the dark matter just to clog things up instead of keeping things going. And it becomes a miserable experience. And there's no more black holes recycling energy, so it slows up the other dimensions as well to some extent. It's a problem. We don't want it to be, and we can stop it, and we have a way of doing it. Okay, let me just finish by giving that some of the things that you might want to consider in this model and the revelation that I'm trying to give you. Thinking about it from the perspective that I have gone through on this show, our universe is a place of such fantastic sorts that even if you don't go into all the other stuff I started the show with, all those other places that are far beyond our universe, this is a universe that you really can't ever be bored in. This is a universe of amazing creations of life, far beyond anything we've ever heard or thought of. This is a universe that makes science fiction seem stupid and ridiculous and small, most of it. And all of the science fiction that you're experiencing in the overuse of the dark part of the third ray today is nonsense. No, there aren't advanced aliens out there who are coming to destroy us. There aren't. Yes, they do exist, but they aren't coming here. Why not? Because there's more, far more light that is preventing that from happening. Have they ever approached? Yeah, a couple times. But that's because we got very dark. It's the fall of the last major race of beings, people, the Atlanteans, as some people call them. Those folks were contaminated to some extent by some really dark ones. But it doesn't. That's not the bottom line. The bottom line is that we are basically still in a great element of protection, and the universe overall has very little of that. But it could grow if we fail here and some other planets like us fail. We're less than 1% of the physical planets are like us. We are less. And we're at the extreme edge of even them. So we have a great chance here to make a great contribution and to experience some of the greater things I'm telling you about. And all of us eventually will. All of this amazing things that are open to us, we will enjoy from a perspective that is completely beyond human and completely amazing. That's where we're headed. Even if you're evil, I don't know if too many people are listening to me are evil or anything, but even those people you think are evil or who are evil, will eventually overcome that, and they will become enlightened beings. The system is designed that way. But because there has to be freedom, and freedom to even deny God and try to destroy God, destroy life, you have to have that freedom that has to allow the open possibility that evil can at times overtake good and become a terrible thing for a while. In the perspective of things, it causes great suffering in a narrow area. But it isn't so narrow if you're there. Let's make sure that Earth isn't going to be that narrow place. Think about what I said. Try to live a life of virtue. Think about some of the shows that I've done recently on that. And try to make your life into a real wonderment as you become the revelation of this esoteric universe. And if that is where you put yourself, then there's tremendous optimism, and no matter how bad things may get in the physical world, we'll eventually turn it around as long as enough people do something to make that happen. You can't do it just by thinking or praying or whatever. You've got to, this is a universe of intelligent activity, you've got to do that. If you're willing to do it, and make the sacrifices necessary to do it, welcome. We're all going to be doing it together, I hope so soon. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.